Chapter 101. In which another old friend encounters Smike, very opportunely and to some purpose. The night, fraught with so much bitterness to one poor soul, had given place to a bright and cloudless summer morning, when a north country mail coach traversed, with cheerful noise, the yet silent streets of Islington, and, giving brisk note of its approach with the lively winding of the guard's horn, clattered onward to its halting place hard by the post office. The only outside passenger was a burly, honest-looking countryman on the box, who, with his eyes fixed upon the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral, appeared so rapt in admiring wonder as to be quite insensible to all the bustle of getting out the bags and parcels, until one of the coach windows being let sharply down, he looked round, and encountered a pretty female face which was just then thrust out. "See there, lass!" bawled the countryman, pointing towards the object of his admiration. "There be Paul's Church. Ecod, he be a sizable un, he be. Goodness, John. I shouldn't have thought it could have been half the size. What a monster. Monster. Ye're aboot right theer, I reckon, Mrs. Browdy," said the countryman good-humoredly, as he came slowly down in his huge topcoat. "And wha dost he tak yon place to be new thoughtin' o'er the wa? Ye'd never coom near it gin you thried for 12 months. It's nobbut a post office. Ho! Ho! They need to charge for double athers. A post office? Wha dost he think o' thought? Ecod, if thought's on ye post office, I'd like to see where the Lord Mayor o' Lunnon lives." So saying, John Browdy, for he it was, opened the coach door, and tapping Mrs. Browdy, late Miss Price, on the cheek as he looked in, burst into a boisterous fit of laughter. "Weel," said John. "Dang my bootins, if she bean't asleep ajean. She's been asleep all night, and was, all yesterday, except for a minute or two now and then," replied John Browdy's choice, "and I was very sorry when she woke, for she has been so cross." The subject of these remarks was a slumbering figure, so muffled in shawl and cloak, that it would have been matter of impossibility to guess at its sex, but for a brown beaver bonnet and green veil which ornamented the head, and which, having been crushed and flattened for 250 miles in that particular angle of the vehicle from which the lady's snores now proceeded, presented an appearance sufficiently ludicrous to have moved less risible muscles than those of John Browdy's ruddy face. "Hollow!" cried John, twitching one end of the dragged veil. "Coom, whackin' oop, will ye?" After several burrowings into the old corner, and many exclamations of impatience and fatigue, the figure struggled into a sitting posture, and there, under a mass of crumpled beaver, and surrounded by a semicircle of blue curl papers, were the delicate features of Miss Fanny Squeers. "Oh, Tilda!" cried Miss Squeers, "how you have been kicking of me through this blessed night!" "Well, I do like that," replied her friend, laughing, "when you have had nearly the whole coach to yourself." "Don't deny it, Tilda," said Miss Squeers, impressively, "because you have, and it's no use to go attempting to say you haven't. You mightn't have known it in your sleep, Tilda, but I haven't closed my eyes for a single wink, and so I think I am to be believed." With which reply, Miss Squeers adjusted the bonnet and veil, which nothing but supernatural interference and an utter suspension of nature's laws could have reduced to any shape or form, and evidently flattering herself that it looked uncommonly neat, brushed off the sandwich crumbs and bits of biscuit which had accumulated in her lap, and availing herself of John Browdy's proffered arm, descended from the coach. "Nu," said John, when a hackney coach had been called, and the ladies and the luggage hurried in, "gang to the Sarah's Head, mun." "To the Veer?" cried the coachman. Locke, Mr. Brownie. Apostrophe apostrophe interrupted Miss Squeers. The idea. Saracen's head. Apostrophe, sure lie, apostrophe said John, I know that was something about Saracen's head. Dost thou know that? Apostrophe, oh, ah. I know that, apostrophe replied the coachman gruffly, as he banged the door. Tilda, dear, really, apostrophe remonstrated Miss Squeers, we shall be taken for I don't know what. Apostrophe, let them tack us as they find us, apostrophe said John Brownie. We didn't come to London, to do naught but joy Ursel, do we? Apostrophe apostrophe, I hope not, Mr. Brownie, apostrophe replied Miss Squeers, looking singularly dismal. Well then, apostrophe said John, it's no matter. I've only been a married man 4 days, account of poor old Feather Dean, and putting it off. Here be a wedding party bride and bridesmaid, and the groom, if a mun didn't joy himself knew, when oughty, hey? Drat it all, that's what I want to know. Apostrophe, so, in order that he might begin to enjoy himself at once, and lose no time, Mr. Brownie gave his wife a hearty kiss, and succeeded in wresting another from Miss Squeers, after a maidenly resistance of scratching and struggling on the part of that young lady, which was not quite over when they reached the Saracen's Head. Here, the party straightway retired to rest, the refreshment of sleep being necessary after so long a journey. And here they met again about noon, to a substantial breakfast, spread by direction of Mr. John Brownie, in a small private room upstairs commanding an uninterrupted view of the stables. To have seen Miss Squeers now, divested of the brown beaver, the green veil, and the blue curl papers, and arrayed in all the virgin splendor of a white frock and spencer, with a white muslin bonnet, and an imitative damask rose in full bloom on the inside thereof her luxuriant crop of hair arranged in curls so tight, that it was impossible they could come out by any accident, and her bonnet cap trimmed with little damask roses, which might be supposed to be so many promising signs of the big rose, to have seen all this, and to have seen the broad damask belt, matching both the family rose and the little roses, which encircled her slender waist, and by a happy ingenuity, took off from the shortness of the spencer behind, to have beheld all this, and to have taken further into account the coral bracelets rather short of beads, and with a very visible black string, which clasped her wrists, and the coral necklace which rested on her neck, supporting, outside her frock, a lonely cornelian heart, typical of her own disengaged affections, to have contemplated all these mute, but expressive appeals to the purest feelings of our nature, might have thought the frost of age, and added new and inextinguishable fuel to the fire of youth. The waiter was touched. Waiter as he was, he had human passions and feelings, and he looked very hard at Miss Squeers as he handed the muffins. Is my pie in, do you know? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Miss Squeers with dignity. Beg your pardon, miss? Apostrophe apostrophe, my pa, apostrophe repeated Miss Squeers. Is he in? Apostrophe, in where, miss? Apostrophe apostrophe, in here in the house. Apostrophe apostrophe replied Miss Squeers. My pa Mr. Wackford Squeers he's stopping here. Is he at home? Apostrophe, I didn't know there was any gentleman of that name in the house, missus replied the waiter. There may be, in the coffee room. Apostrophe, maybe. Very pretty this, indeed. Here was Miss Squeers, who had been depending, all the way to London, upon showing her friends, how much at home she would be, and how much respectful notice her name and connections would excite, told that her father might be there. As if he was a feller. Apostrophe apostrophe observed Miss Squeers, with emphatic indignation. Ye'd better inquire, mun, apostrophe said John Brownie. And hand up another pigeon pie, will ye? Dang the chap, apostrophe muttered John, looking into the empty dish as the waiter retired. Does he circa this a pie 3 young pigeons, and a trifling matter o' steak, and a crust so loit, that you don't know when it's in your mouth, and when it's gane? I wonder who many pies goes to a breakfast. apostrophe, after a short interval, which John Browdie employed upon the ham, and a cold round of beef, the waiter returned with another pie, and the information that Mr. Squeers was not stopping in the house, but that he came there every day and that directly he arrived, he should be shown upstairs. With this, he retired. And he had not retired 2 minutes, when he returned with Mr. Squeers and his hopeful son. Why, who'd have thought of this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Squeers, when he had saluted the party, and received some private family intelligence from his daughter. Who, indeed, pa? Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied that young lady, spitefully. But you see, Tilda is married at last. Apostrophe, and I stand threat for a pseudo London schoolmeister, apostrophe, said John, vigorously attacking the pie. One of them things that young men do when they get married, apostrophe, returned Squeers, and as runs through with their money like nothing at all. How much better wouldn't it be now, to save it up for the education of any little boys, for instance? They come on you, apostrophe, said Mr. Squeers in a moralizing way, before you're aware of it. Mind it upon me. Apostrophe, will he pick a bit? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said John. I won't myself, apostrophe, returned Squeers. But if you'll just let little Wackford tuck into something fat, I'll be obliged to you. Give it him in his fingers, else the waiter charges it on, and there's lot of profit on this sort of victuals without that. If you hear the waiter coming, sir, shove it in your pocket and look out of the window, do you hear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'm awake, father, apostrophe, replied the dutiful Wackford. Well, apostrophe, said Squeers, turning to his daughter, it's your turn to be married next. You must make haste. Apostrophe, oh, I'm in no hurry, apostrophe, said Miss Squeers, very sharply. No, Fanny? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried her old friend with some archness. No, Tilda, apostrophe, replied Miss Squeers, shaking her head vehemently. I can wait. Apostrophe, so can the young man, it seems, Fanny, apostrophe, observed Mrs. Browdie. They and draw it into it by me, Tilda, apostrophe, retorted Miss Squeers. No, apostrophe, returned her friend, that's exceedingly true. Apostrophe, the sarcastic tone of this reply might have provoked a rather acrimonious retort from Miss Squeers, who, besides being of a constitutionally vicious temper aggravated, just now, by travel and recent jolting was somewhat irritated by old recollections, and the failure of her own designs upon Mr. Browdie, and the acrimonious retort might have led to a great many other retorts, which might have led to heaven knows what, if the subject of conversation had not been, at that precise moment, accidentally changed by Mr. Squeers himself. What do you think? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said that gentleman. Who do you suppose we have laid hands on, Wackford and me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pa, not mister? Apostrophe, Miss Squeers was unable to finish the sentence, but Mrs. Browdie did it for her, and added, Nickleby? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said Squeers. But next door to him though. Apostrophe, you can't mean Smike? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Squeers, clapping her hands. Yes, I can though, apostrophe, rejoined her father. I've got him, hard and fast. Apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed John Browdie, pushing away his plate. Got that poor dommit scoundrel? Where? Apostrophe, why, in the top back room, at my lodging, apostrophe, replied Squeers, with him on one side, and the key on the other. Apostrophe, a dilution. Feast gotten him a dilution? Ho! Ho! The schoolmeister of in all England. Give us the hand, mun. I'm darned but I must shack thee by the hand for thought. Gotten him a dilution? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, replied Squeers, staggering in his chair under the congratulatory blow on the chest which the stout Yorkshireman dealt him. Thank ye. Don't do it again. You mean it kindly, I know, but it hurts rather. Yes, there he is. That's not so bad, is it? Apostrophe, bad. repeated John Browdy. It's any of to scare a mon to hear tell on. I thought it would surprise you a bit, said Squeers, rubbing his hands. It was pretty neatly done, and pretty quick too. Who wore it? Inquired John, sitting down close to him. Tell us all about it, mon, coom, quick. Although he could not keep pace with John Browdy's impatience, Mr. Squeers related the lucky chance by which Smike had fallen into his hands, as quickly as he could, and, except when he was interrupted by the admiring remarks of his auditors, paused not in the recital until he had brought it to an end. For fear he should give me the slip, by any chance, observed Squeers, when he had finished, looking very cunning, I've taken 3 outsides for tomorrow morning for Wackford and him and me, and have arranged to leave the accounts, and the new boys to the agent, don't you see? So it's very lucky you come today, or you'd have missed us. And as it is, unless you could come and tea with me tonight, we shan't see anything more of you before we go away. Didn't say another word, returned the Yorkshireman, shaking him by the hand. We'd come, if it was 20 mile. No, would you though? Returned Mr. Squeers, who had not expected quite such a ready acceptance of his invitation, or he would have considered twice before he gave it. John Browdy's only reply was another squeeze of the hand, and an assurance that they would not begin to see London till tomorrow, so that they might be at Mr. Snawley's at 6 o'clock without fail. And after some further conversation, Mr. Squeers and his son departed. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.